Discussion keeps the world turning.
This is Round Table.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Roundtable, coming to you from Beijing. I'm He Young. Good as always to have you join us on today's show. Feeling like you've got a work smell clinging to you? It's become a humorous badge of honor for many young Chinese workers. To shake off the stress, they're diving into what's called a healing economy, exploring a myriad of activities aimed at finding inner peace. We take a look at wellness practices to reclaim your peace of mind. And we're all ears for your burning questions and epic stories. Grab your smartphone, record a voice memo, and let's make radio magic. Send your thoughts to ezfmroundtable@foxmail.com. You might just steal the spotlight in our next heart-to-heart segment. For today's program, I'm joined by Li Yi in the studio and Josh Cotterell on the line first on today's show. Recently, the term work stench has been making rounds online, with many young people humorously remark that they are carrying the lingering odor of work after a day on the job. In response to the stress and negative emotions associated with work sometimes, young people have pursued various activities aimed at finding peace of mind, contributing to what's now called the healing economy. So, the Chinese goes as ban fur, or work smell, office odor, work stench. I have many emotionally loaded translations. Li Yi, what kind of flavor does work carry in this context?
Yeah, it's not a good one. It's actually very interesting, a phrase that's so popular among young people these days. And people might call it work smell, work sense, or workplace aura. I think they're basically using this phrase to describe the feeling or aura of being really tired or exhausted from work. And especially many young people are really saying this in a quite mocking or humorous way, but it's all about telling the fact that they're being so immersed and overwhelmed by work that they feel quite challenging to cope with the stress and exhaustion. And I think especially different people, you know, of different jobs have their own definition of this work smell. For example, a freelancer surnamed Joe said it's really difficult to define what exactly banver or work smell is, but he's describing it as all uncomfortable feelings brought by work, and he does feel that his emotion and psychology are not really in a good condition while he's working. And also besides physical and mental exhaustion, I think people are using this banver to refer to the state that they have to be disciplined at workplace. They have to obey certain rules and be responsive to the requirements from your bosses and also some universal workplace expectations. In most cases, as a mature working person, you somehow need to fit into the workplace culture, which is something you may not always want to do. And especially people are already comparing their working experience with their years in college, where there aren't really so many rules, or they don't really have to take a lot of responsibilities or accountabilities, which make people feel more free. Yet at workplace, it's totally different. It can also be stressful. And also people are saying that this banver is quite noticeable. As long as you are working, as long as you are getting involved in those daily works, you have this smell or you have this scent, and people around you can notice that you are definitely an exhausted working person. Mm-hmm. So that's how some interesting discussion about this banver involves.
So overall, nobody is thinking, oh, this is a great scent. This is a really positive. So it's not positive then.
I believe that, no.
Oh, sad. Okay, Josh, after listening to all that explanation, we can pretty much arrive at the point that banver is apparently more of a metaphorical term here. What's your translation as such? Or what's your interpretation of the situation?
Yeah, well, I mean, like a lot of these new concepts, it's quite difficult to translate, but I do think maybe a better translation would be something more omnipresent. And we have words in English like aura, like vibe, persona, maybe, or disposition, something that is sort of a bit more universal and present than, say, flavor, which is a bit more specific to a scent, right? Or smell, which is a bit more specific to a particular kind of scent. And when you use a word like that, like flavor or smell, it immediately makes my brain as a native speaker go to that scent. And it would make me think that, oh, if it's a smell, it's because maybe you've been working really long hours, right? And maybe you smell bad, which is very normal, but, you know, that's what I would think of. Flavor is a little bit strange because it means you taste like work.
Which is really
I'm not
gross.
Really sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's a little bit difficult, but I do understand it. And I guess that in Chinese, probably maybe some of these words would make more sense directly translated.
Actually,
and I know that words like, yes, please.
Sorry. Actually, in Chinese, I don't think it makes all that much sense either. Mm. And I think there's a similar, and this is kind of rare that in Chinese and English, I think there is a similar kind of weirdness and you don't get it immediately kind of reaction. But what is aimed to be conveyed here, I suppose, is that it's meant to gross you out a little bit, that it's like this taste or this like sensory kind of idea, and it doesn't taste good, and that's just a bit ew. But I mean, yeah, it's really interesting, like how what people are conveying here, like the hidden message or the underlying message as such. But in terms of when people realize, when your so-called banwei or this let's just call it work stench, maybe this is a bit of naivete displayed unintentionally. But, like, you go to work wearing work clothes anyway, right? You don't wear your PJs to work. And then, you know, you're a bit more dressed up and then maybe dressed in a corporate style or whatnot. And how is it or why is it that people kind of automatically interpret that, let's say, when an older retired lady saw you come home from work and that person says, oh, you poor thing, having a long day? Or why do people just automatically take that as pity or sympathy or whatnot? Maybe it's just this older lady or gentleman just being very, you know, showing empathy and knows that a long day at work is just not easy. And you're earning salary. You're not living on a fixed pension. You should be happy about what you're going through. Anyway, so there are different ways to look at this, just offering sort of a different perspective, if possible. So why do you think this is something that people are talking about online, and this originally sort of like a viral term has migrated its way into real life to some extent?
Yeah, I think all in all, people are really discussing about their exhaustion and also a sense of being overwhelmed at workplace nowadays. Although it's not really a new thing, I believe like previous generations, they also experienced like work exhaustion. However, it's being discussed right now. I think, first of all, this is a universal discussion, really. It's not really something unique in China. I mean, in recent years, we do see a lot of discussion about whether or not younger generations are more stressed than their like previous generations at workplace, whether or not they're experiencing more stress compared with previous generations. I mean, all over the world. And especially when I do the research about this topic, I found a really like touching article written by a young lady from India who has really made many people feel related to. She was complaining about like huge stress she, as a member of Generation Z, has to cope with. She read something like this. As Gen Z, we are the tired generation. All of my friends, my family, my colleagues are exhausted all the time. Even my grandmother is more energetic than I am. I also have chronic headaches. My body hurts when I get out of the bed, and I feel like I'm already 50 years old. I find it really hard to concentrate on tasks sometimes, and I forgot a lot of stuff. She also complained about her messed up sleeping schedule. I think that's a sentiment that's somehow shared by young people all over the world all of a sudden. And maybe one reason is that, first of all, they are young people. They're still experiencing that transition period from college graduation to workplace, daily work routine. Thinking about like your time in colleges, although we also need to cope with certain deadlines for your assignments, papers, and schoolwork, I think you do have more autonomy in terms of how you allocate your time and your schedule. You can still decide how you spend like everyday life by yourself. And I still remember, you know, during colleges, I would just go for like short trips from time to time, as long as I do have like 3-day or 4-day vacations. Even sometimes I would just skip some unimportant classes, which is not really good. But I'm just saying that you have more flexibility when you are in college. But then at workplace, we all have to obey to certain like workplace rules, like being punctual, like being responsive, like you have to follow certain steps as long as you are in this project. And also you have to fit into the workplace culture. So basically, I think workplace is really a pretty structured environment. Mm-hmm. It's not really as flexible as campus life. Mm-hmm. So maybe that's one reason that some young people are really complaining about this new normal they found in their daily working life.
Well, I think that it isn't really a new phenomenon. I think that the maybe this term has become a bit of a phenomenon, or at least we're starting to acknowledge it more on a broader scale. But the idea of workplace behavior deeply shaping our behavior outside of work has been around for quite a long time. I found quite a lot of old research, a study by Cable and Judge from 1996 on person organization examines how individual personalities align with organizational cultures over time. Another even older study on occupational socialization by Van Manen and Shine from 1979 explored how individuals internalize workplace roles. And there's a multitude of other studies. Mm-hmm. But I guess that now this is becoming a bit more broader. And because of social media, it's becoming a bit more obvious. Maybe also because there's a generational, a bigger gulf between generations when it comes to workplace values. And, you know, this example that I heard about today about somebody walking down a thin alleyway and you know, seeing somebody and then moving out the way and the older person saying, no, you go, I can tell you need to get to work, right? They could mm-hmm. they could sense it on them, and it sounds like there's a generational difference here. So what's given rise to it? I think it's always been there, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. It's possible that younger generations, the new workforce, are acknowledging this more, not that it exists more, but they're more sensitive to this because they like to compartmentalize and have work time as work time and off work time as off work time more than previous generations. This is a possibility, but it's quite difficult for me to assume this. So personally, I think that it's not increasing. Mm. I don't think that people are smelling more of work than they did before, if that makes sense.
Okay.
But I think that it's being acknowledged more through social media.
Yeah. So people are smelling fine. It's just in a way, in a self-deprecating humor, do people exhibit that maybe there's something of an underlying rejection to what's appearing on the surface. That is, a lot of young people, as they join the workforce and then they feel, well, you got to conform to the rules of society, of corporate culture or whatnot. But also, you know, if you're freelancing, then it'd be a kind of different story to some extent.
Yeah. And also, despite the fact that people have all like been dealing with their working stress all the time, I still think younger generations today, they are dealing with some special challenges mm-hmm. in terms of, we all know like technology is developing really fast nowadays. Like we talk about AI all the time. We talk about how AI will just transform all the sectors in a few days. And we talk about how people are being anxious about that. I think in that situation, young people do have to deal with these extra challenges brought by technologies, although they are bringing like convenience and a new hope for people working nowadays. I think they are also bringing these challenges, and especially with like those digital devices and the social media apps, which are so convenient. I think the line between work and life is so blurred right now.
Yeah. And also we keep on saying young people, I suppose we're referring to Gen Z, those born after 1995 and then plus, you know, 15 years to that and also minus 15 years from that. So those, you know, born in the very early years of the 1980s as well. I think they're both generations are sort of living through this reality. But for this bigger group of so-called young people of, you know, of the workforce, they're also to some extent experiencing far less job security as previous generations. And for, you know, our parents' generation, it was very easy to say there was loyalty towards a company or organization. Mm-hmm. And for, let's say, those that work for the state, then it's like a lifelong job and everything's very secure. So the organization is responsible for their employee from almost, it feels, cradle to grave, but that ain't gonna exist anymore. And this kind of sense of struggling to find belonging, one thing due to the fact that so many people have moved away from their ancestral homes or the region and to a big city, new city, or whatnot, and you need to build your supporting network or a social network from zero, that's another thing on top of, you know, job security isn't necessarily there anymore. And then it's just very easy to feel sometimes a little bit lost, but certainly this uncertainty and longing to establish something that is worthwhile, that is long lasting. So I think that might be something that young people are feeling, and that reflects the social change that happens in fast urbanizing countries. With against that backdrop, we see that many businesses have try their best to cater towards these vulnerable needs, as well as, you know, finding the new business opportunity. And we've seen that some people say that they need metaphysics or some kind of 玄学 to help them heal their soul. And I remember, just to throw a couple of examples here, part of the healing economy as such has grown from this. And Josh, could you brush us up on the latest examples and share with us your thoughts about this, is it spiritual aspect of things, and how do you feel about it?
Yeah, so there's definitely a spiritual aspect to this, and I think that there's quite a market for it. I think that we can talk about things like metaphysics and young people showing interests in things like bracelets. And there is one example I can give you, bracelets which are blessed from the Yonghe Palace, which used to be a good gift to bring good luck to people. But actually, apparently fewer people still remain interested in getting these bracelets. And instead, they bring some cheaper bracelets that they can buy from other places and such. Another example is that some young people believe that five-star hotels are lucky places. This is quite new to me. I didn't know this. And the layout and decoration of these hotels are guided by professional feng shui masters. And this can bring in a peace, and it can even be lucky, I guess. I'm not sure if luck is exactly the right word to use here, if the translation's correct, but it seems like that to me. Another example is that some brands are using metaphysics as a way of marketing. For example, Dior uses the butterfly, and the golden butterfly is said to attract wealth. Many young people even go to the Dior store to take photos in Shanghai. And other brands like Chow Tai Fook have also promoted jewelry with butterflies. So there's a lot of ways in which businesses are utilizing some of these images and symbols and metaphysics to attract a new audience. And I wonder if this is just really good marketing or whether it actually does bring good luck. I guess that depends on the person and will vary. Yes, but there's definitely a healing economy here. I will tell you a little bit more about the healing economy. Now, there is a report by the Global Wellness Institute which predicts that the global healing economy will grow at a rate of about 10% per year. And by 2025, the market size of the healing economy will reach $7 trillion. Another figure that I have here, according to data from the Ministry of Finance, the sales of the instant lottery tickets in 2023 reach 119 billion yuan, that's $16 billion, an increase of over 100% year on year, which is really staggering. And according to data, 72% of lottery consumers believe that entertainment and relaxation is one of the main reasons for their purchase of lottery tickets.
Also, I'm interested to hear from you guys, what does the healing economy include? Because it sounds like an all-encompassing term. Like, people have been counting, like, meditation, what, selling lottery tickets, as well as some butterfly totems on products, all to be the healing economy. It's just a little nebulous to me.
Yeah, I think nowadays people do have a really broad definition about healing economy, as more like young people are really finding innovative way of healing themselves. I mean, besides those traditional ways of healing like meditation, doing yoga or aromatherapy or some mindfulness classes, and these are quite popular among this generation of young people, of course. But then, as Josh mentioned, there are some new healing tools like people use nowadays, like fortune telling, tarot, zodiac signs, and even like buying lottery tickets can all be considered as part of the healing economy. I think essentially people are not really expecting so much, as these tools can really help solve their problems, but it does really show that people are showing awareness, they are taking care of their mental well-being, they are really working to do something to try to make things better for them.
Also, there are other apps that somehow make it possible for one to count off prayer beads on their smart watches. And with your digital wooden fish simulator, that's also connected to an app. And in 2022, when it first hit the market, it garnered more than 5 million downloads in a couple of months, something like that. So I don't necessarily think that people might have like severe conditions that they need these things, but it just makes you feel a little bit better and add a little bit fun and the possibility or avenue to find a serenity of some sort. And also, it's good for fidgeting. Plenty of reasons why people are doing this. And I suspect that these terms of office stench, demeanor, whatever you call it, or the healing economy are all new terms that encapsulate and capture something of a kind of old phenomenon. But it's good to sort of have a reason to shed some light on it again and raise some awareness as such. And to each their own, whatever works for you, right? And as we were doing research on this topic, I came across what young people do apparently in South Korea, and it almost made me shed a tear. Keeping rocks as pets. And speaking of rocks, Josh, you have some expertise in that department, I believe. What do you think about this? What's your read into the predicament of, you know, our fellow friends in South Korea?
They're not rocks that I'm into. They're fossils.
Oh, fossils. Old rocks. I'm sorry. Super ancient rocks. No, they're not.
Most rocks are pretty old.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
By the way.
But they're fossils. I mean, yeah. They're not really rocks.
It depends.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I do understand it, right? And I mean, it's strange because these objects are inanimate to some degree. But one could argue that we're all inanimate. And I think that you can sort of humanize or personify an inanimate object like a rock, and it can bring you great comfort to have something to talk to. Now, there is a danger with talking to something that doesn't respond to you. I think that maybe it can make you turn you into a recluse of some sort, and you know, maybe reduce your social skills to some degree if you go too far with it. But I think that it makes a lot of sense, you know. I know that maybe a rock seems a bit strange, but rocks can be beautiful, you know? And yes, I guess fossils are rocks, but rocks have history. They have stories. They're composed of very complex and interesting minerals and chemicals and such. And many of them have been formed in very interesting ways.
Yes.
Fossils are very interesting because you can really see what animal they were. And if you're interested in history, especially prehistoric history, you can actually do a lot of research and see the kind of environments that this animal was living in and what the world was like at that time. And there's it's just endless, endless story, fascinating stories.
Yeah.
Hoyang. So I encourage you to take a look, and I will bring you a fossil one day, and I will call it, I will get a fossil and name it Hoyang, right?
Oh my.
Talk to it every day.
That's an interesting turn of events. I didn't expect.
Feel about that?
Sorry?
How do you feel about that?
I think that will have to be shared when two nerds are convening off the show. And But Josh, I agree with you. I think for anybody out there to really find your fascination that can turn your attention away from work and the anxiety that real life brings for a temporary escape, I think that's possibly really good for us and recommended here.